I was in a coma for 6 weeks while the doctors told my wife I was going to die. When I woke up, she told me the most fantastic story. My team kept running the business without me. Freelancers reached out to my team and said, "We will do whatever it takes as long as Craig's in the hospital." I consider that the greatest accomplishment in my career. My name is Craig Andrews, and this is the Leaders and Legacies podcast, where we talk to leaders creating an impact beyond themselves. At the end of today's interview, I'll tell you how you can be the next leader featured on this show. Today, I want to welcome Milam Miller. He is the founder of Be Confident and Kind. He's the author of The Charisma Craft, a modern leadership guide to enhance your Riz factor. Milam has worked for a billionaire sports team owner over in Italy, and it's where he developed a lot of his skills in charisma and picked up the name the real-life Ted Lasso. And so he runs a leadership development firm that helps sales leaders unlock charisma, emotional intelligence, and authentic influence. Milam, welcome.
Thanks, Craig. I appreciate you having me. Happy to be here with a fellow Texas resident.
Yeah. No, I mean, I grew up in the Northeast, but I married a Texan and they seem to accept me here. So
you're a smart man marrying a Texan. Yeah. There's some old saying, like, I wasn't born in Texas, but I got there as quickly as I could. So
yeah. Did you grow up in Texas?
I did. I'm a proud Longhorn. Grew up in the Central Texas area between Austin and San Antonio. And funny enough, got a finance degree. And here I am helping leaders become more effective at leading people.
Wow. Yeah. Because, I mean, often the finance folks, they're not the most charismatic.
Well, I would argue we all have charisma. You have it, Craig. I have it. Every human on this planet has it if they choose to believe they have it. And therein lies a fundamental fact in my new book, which is charisma is actually a skill, meaning anyone can develop it. It's not an inborn personality trait. But I do think you're onto something. I think finance bros, as sometimes they get labeled on social media unfairly or fairly, it depends on who the judge is, the verdict's still out. But they could certainly maybe enhance their warmth or the kindness factor to charisma, which we can dive into a little bit more.
Well, it's, you know, one of the things I do every now and then is I help people prep to get booked on podcasts. And I mean, you have like a gazillion executive coaches, a gazillion CFO. I mean, name the thing. Yeah. And there's like 1,000 people out there doing exactly that. And they're all applying to be on the podcast. And I tell them, I said, you know, if you want to get on, you have to pull out something that's interesting about yourself. And I tell people this is, you know, so you may be ruining one of my stage jokes. I said, look, everybody has something interesting in their background. Yeah. It's there. You have to look for it.
Yeah.
With one exception, accountants, you're irredeemably boring. Sorry.
I love this absolute poor accountants. It's not too late to change your mind, CPAs. You can abort the mission.
Well, what's funny is even, you know, so I wrote an About Us page for a CPA. Mm. And for a long time, it stood as my wife judges those. We did a different style About Us page. And for a long time, his was the standard of, does it measure up to Cameron's About Us page? And so we managed to make an accountant interested. So it's possible. And obviously, it worked out for you.
Yeah.
But the thing, I'm a little bit interested in this whole billionaire sports owner. You want to talk about people that are cut from different cloth, people that have charisma. I don't know what happens on the road to billionaire, if it's a filter, if it's a development process, but I can't think of a single billionaire that's not phenomenally fascinating.
Mm, fascinating, yes. Charismatic, I don't know, because I don't know all of them, but I would argue that they probably have developed some craft that has brought them success as we define it in Western society. And it's given them a platform, ultimately. When you have wealth of that level, you have a new platform through which to operate from. And I say that because many sports team owners, let's take Mark Cuban, for example, right? He was successful in his career. I believe he rode the dot-com boom, if I'm not mistaken, and he's done a number of things since then. But Mark Cuban wasn't born into that level of privilege. Mark Cuban worked at it, worked hard, right place, right time, a little bit of luck, all those things. And then he used his platform by owning the Dallas Mavericks to feed other business interests. So I know that in the case of my experience, I had an owner who's a little bit more private, a little bit more enigmatic to a certain extent. And but at the same time, I learned a lot from him about his charisma craft, which is uniquely different than mine. He also grew up in the Northeast like you. So he had a little bit more of a forcefulness to him as opposed to a playfulness, which I choose to embrace.
Interesting. So, are you saying that you can be forceful and charismatic and playful and charismatic? Is that a choice somewhere in this road?
So charisma is not a black or white thing. It doesn't look like just forceful charisma or just playful charisma. Charisma is actually really in the eye of the beholder. And what I've learned based on research, pioneering research out of Princeton, it's called the social stereotype content model, is that people who have two skills. Number one, high competence, meaning they know what they're talking about, they're not full of BS. And two, warmth. In other words, they lead with a lot of empathy, kindness, which I touched on earlier. Those are the people that are perceived as highly charismatic. We're attracted to them. They have this magnetic aura or energy that is just buzzing. And what I found in my own experiences on this planet is that those individuals typically don't think about me, 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 like I'm hot stuff. There's usually a focus on them. And they want to get to know Craig. They want to get to know Milam. They make the other person feel like they're the most important person in the room. So they're not trying to prove a point by being overly competent and be a know-it-all. And they're not nice or a pushover and just yesing you to death. They know that fine line. So the billionaire I worked for, he had a phenomenal charisma craft, like I said, uniquely his own. He could be playful at times, but when it was a boardroom setting, he was turning up the competence, turning down the warmth, if that makes sense.
Turning up the competence, turning down the what?
The warmth
Warmth.
in a boardroom setting. Yeah, more forceful, more direct.
Interesting. I'm in a mastermind, and I didn't realize it, but I got a reputation for just asking, like said from the perspective of the one being questioned, I was asking these just drilling questions. And I wasn't trying to be. I mean, I wasn't trying to put anybody on the spot. These were just questions I had. And somebody made some casual comment of, I sustained the questioning of Craig. And I was like, that's not what I want said about me. I'm actually, we were working an issue they had, and I'm just asking questions because I'm trying to understand their problem with the hopes that maybe I have some idea that could be helpful.
Interesting. What do you think was going on there? I'm curious. Do you think they were perceiving you as when I hear the gauntlet of Craig, just like being incessant or overly persistent, perhaps? What was your perception of their perception of you?
Well, sometimes when you ask questions, it exposes a nakedness. And I'm sure you've had this, ha I've had it happen to me, for sure, where somebody will ask me a question, and in a split second, I feel like the dumbest person in the world. They're like, did you, well, I noticed you tripped. Did you, were your shoes tied? I'm like, no, they weren't tied. But the way I process that is just like, I'm really glad they asked me that question. I'm a little bit ashamed that I didn't ask that before, but I'm nevertheless thankful that they did that. And I'm wondering if some of what I'm picking up on is, sometimes, at least for me, some of the most valuable people in my life are the people that ask me questions I know that I will know the answer to. I just haven't taken the time to ask myself that question.
Interesting. It's nice to have those friends that can, for lack of a better term, push us, right? Or expose blinders or give us the encouragement or the belief that we do have the answers, right? Like you have agency to come up with a creative answer yourself, but I also think, Craig, it's okay to not know the answer to everything. Some of the most confident people I know are the first ones to say, I don't know the answer to that yet. And it's the power of yet that we live in a world with instantaneous information exchange. We can go and find the answer, right? We might have to fact check it. Like AI might get it wrong, but we have so much information at our fingertips. And I find nothing more refreshing than a leader specifically that says, I don't know the answer to that yet, but it seems important to you and I'm willing to find out.
So one of the people, when I'm thinking about the questions, kind of processing your question, and we definitely want to tie this to charisma. So Jeff Immelt, former CEO of GE, followed
Sure.
Jack Welch.
Yeah. I write about him in my book, funny enough. Both of those gentlemen.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, he talked about, so at one point, as he was rising up in GE, Jack put him in charge of the appliance division. And he would fly in for like quarterly reviews with Jack. And he'd sit down, Jack would just start asking questions. And Jeff was like, man, I just felt stripped naked. And he's like, one day, one time we wrapped up a meeting and Jack came up to me. He's like, hey, you're doing really well. And he's like, I didn't feel, he's like, are you the same person that just asked me all those questions in the room?
Sure.
But kind of tying it back, obviously, Jack Welch was charismatic. He was able to attract a lot of people. Obviously, Jeff Immelt was no wilting flower, but in the moment, in those questions, Jack really, he was just asking important questions about how Jeff was running the business, which made him felt stripped bare a little bit, stripped
Sure.
naked. But then Jack came back and encouraged him to let him know, you're doing a great job. You have a tough job. This is a tough division to run.
Yeah. What that reveals to me, or what's coming up for me rather, Craig, is a couple of things. Number one, it sounds like Jeff was not assuming positive intent from Jack. He was like, why is he interrogating me? Which an interrogation is totally different from curiosity taking the lead. And so I think from Jack's perspective, he's like, I have an insatiable appetite for information. I am so curious. This isn't an attack or an interrogation. It's just me gathering data or facts. That his competence was probably a little too charged, and Jack could have maybe deployed a little bit more warmth to make the environment more convivial for Jeff to really open up and share. But it sounds like Jack did a little bit of damage control, maybe could sense that with his emotional intelligence, to then after the fact encourage him and say, hey, that was a lot of questions. Like, just there's no other way to put it. Very matter of fact. And I think you're doing a great job. Keep it up. This happens all the time with the leaders I work with. And I think that the future of work that we are being confronted with right now, Craig, is one in which everyone is busy. Everyone is constantly getting a ping from an Apple Watch, from their phone, from their Slack channel, Microsoft Teams. Pick your favorite connectivity tool. And the issue is these connectivity tools, while there was great intent behind them to keep us aligned, right? Alignment's so important. We were talking before this about marketing perspectives versus sales perspectives. Marketing folks, sales folks use the analogy of cats and dogs. Well, let's stay in alignment over our Slack channel. And ultimately, what I think we've lost is connection. And that's why I wanted to write a book on human connection, not go out and invent another app or product that's a connectivity tool that will fall out of favor. Because really, what we need in the future of work is leaders who listen, truly listen, active listening. Leaders who seek to understand Jack Welch, understanding Jeffrey's position in that unit, and leaders who validate, who say, like, I know you're the right he, she, they, them for the job, and they're empowering them to do what they do well.
So if you were to go back and coach Jack Welch, a daunting task, no less,
No kidding, right?
what would you tell Jack? Hey, Jack, why don't you try doing this differently in the next meeting? What would you tell him?
Well, I wouldn't start with that. Funny enough, Craig, I wouldn't tell him what to do differently. I would start with, Jack, you're a good guy. You're a good old boy. Like, everyone likes being around you from what I've read, heard, seen. Obviously, he's now left us posthumously. But if you're still alive, I'd say, everyone likes you, Jack. And Jack, you can be a little intense sometimes. Does that seem fair, or do you have a different perspective of yourself and really allow him to get curious about himself. It's one of the ABCs of charisma, the C standing for curiosity. And I would really want to equip him with that acknowledgement, self-acknowledgement, that power to say, what do you think is your impact currently in this organization? And then ask the question, can you live with that? Would you like to continue to have that impact, or do you want to change it? Do you want your impact to change or shift? And I'd be really curious what he would have to say.
Yeah. Well, and kind of going back to the kind of the Craig's gauntlet of questions, I think they feel intense. You know, you're talking about the intensity. I think it feels intense to those.
Yeah. Well, I think it's scary. I'll be rather vulnerable here. I think men probably have this fear more than women, although I don't want to speak for that population. Of men, because of our ego, hubris, pride, whatever it may be, right? Let's be real. Being stripped bare naked or being exposed, there's this fear of like, well, we're men. We're supposed to like be confident. We're supposed to be protectors. Like, we're hunters. Like, you know, we bring home like food for the herd. And there's a lot of, I think, evolutionary conditioning that now we're seeing the scales tip. We're seeing that women are having higher earning power in the workplace. They're having children later. They're not taking as much time for maternity leave, or they're coming back rather. The most compelling research I found when I was writing my book is that at the age of 40, Craig, up until that point, men index overconfident compared to women. Like, they perceive themselves to be fit for jobs. But at the age of 40, the graph starts to cross. Women tap into some level of self-efficacy that I don't know if it's tied to a tipping point. I would love for Malcolm Gladwell to study this. Many of them may be becoming mothers that gives them this added confidence. But that's when women start embodying the same level of confidence that men have for, if they go into the workforce at 2022, 20 years ahead of them, which is kind of mind-boggling.
That's fascinating. I'd never heard that. So let's kind of come back to charisma. What is it, and if I don't have it, how do I get it?
Sure. So let's define it. Charisma is two-way human connection. I'm going to back up. I was taught, Craig, that charisma was one-way attraction. You've got to look like JFK, like good looks, suave hair, and, you know, very debonair, and be a phenomenal orator, right? That's what charisma is. Tall, dark, and handsome, right? Yeah. That's charisma. That's not charisma. And especially, I want to be sensitive to female listeners as well. Maybe you think charisma in the modern age is Kim Kardashian, 300 million followers around the world, right? The most charismatic people, at least in a corporate setting, and maybe I'll throw in a female example, Jenny Rometty, for example, who became the CEO of IBM. What we've learned is that those leaders do not make it about themselves. They're actually in the offices, outside of their corner office with a beautiful view. They're figuring out what matters to each of their teams and why. So that's what charisma is. We need to reframe it as a two-way human connection loop that's predicated on energy exchange and a keen interest in the other person, not a fixation or insecurity of me and how I'm perceived.
Yeah. You know, a book that I'm rereading is Sam Walton's book, Made in America.
I've never read it. Tell me more.
It's a great book. You should read it. It's really, really good. But he talks about one of the things he would do is he would go to the truck depots and he'd show up with a box of donuts.
Yeah.
And he'd just sit down with the truck drivers, and he discovered that they were his best inside intel into what was going on in the stores.
That's right.
Because these drivers would go around to all the stores and he could learn so much about what was happening. But here he is, billionaire, showing up at the truck depot with a box of donuts.
Yeah. Yeah, it's brilliant. I love that case study. Thanks for sharing. I do think there's an incentivization component with the donuts. I've seen that in my own line of work when I've given workshops at Amazon, Google. The best way to get adults, grown adults, Craig, to contribute or participate, I bring cookies. I bring biscuits with the boss because that's part of my brand being the real life Ted Lasso, which we can delve into deeper. But going back to Sam Walton, what that highlights for me, and I think this is a fundamental truth about charisma, is another limiting belief that I grew up thinking was that charisma was an inborn personality trait. You either have it, that it factor, or you don't. And I'm here to tell listeners that's not the case. It actually is a skill that can be crafted to meet your unique personality, but you've got to practice at it and you've got to refine it. And it's really got to be in service to others. And so the minute we can think of charisma, not just as two-way human connection versus one-way attraction, but when we start to think of it as a skill as opposed to an inborn personality trait, then we start to develop it. And what you're sharing about Sam is he didn't think he was above any of those truck drivers, even though he was a billionaire, had one of the fastest growing companies in the world. And that's a fundamental truth of charisma too. Nobody's better than you, nobody's worse than you. We're all on the same playing field. And when we can be authentically ourselves, show up boldly in environments like Sam did, and remain curious, those are my ABCs of charisma: authenticity, boldness, curiosity. You'll start to see your charisma craft take shape.
I love that. And I love the way you break it down to ABC. I'm going to shift gears a little bit, and I'm going to start off with a confession. And at two different companies, I recommended that we replace the sales team with a fax machine. Obviously, we're going back a few years when we still used fax machines.
Sure.
But, I'm a marketer, and yeah, we're like cats and dogs. And in the green room, I told you a story about. In my current business, my biggest success ever was because I was paired up. There was a sales guy that knew how to swing at the pitches we were throwing across the plate. And I would have never experienced that success without him.
Can I intrude real quick, Craig? Because I want to know before you continue on this line of thought, you mentioned him earlier. What did he do, or what did he do differently compared to other sales guys you had been around? Have you ever been able to deduce that?
No, he did it in private. I never figured it out. But the dude could close deals. He would take the pitches, he'd close them. He'd take the leads. He would work them. And there were a couple times where we were sitting down, we were doing lead review, and it was interesting. I could see he got a little bit insecure. He's like, "Oh, he was trying to defend his work as opposed to marketing." And I just paused. I said, "Chris, I want to be clear. We don't sell. If a deal gets closed, it's because you closed it. We're not closing deals. So any deal that gets closed, you closed it." And so things improved. I had to have that conversation a couple times, and things improved. But no, I don't know what it was, other than it just seemed like he was practicing the fundamentals. He was stepping up the plate and working on his swing, and he would sw if there was a pitch coming across the plate, he was swinging at. And so many times, I see them not swinging at the pitch, or I see them trying to win business at price on price. So the two times I recommended replacing the sales team with a fax machine, the only thing they would do is they'd come back and they'd say, "Hey, the customer wants a cheaper price." I'm like, "Really? What value are you bringing to this picture? If that's the only message we're bringing back from the customer, let's just put a fax machine in. We'll have them fax whatever price they want to pay, and we'll figure out if we'll do it."
That's clever.
But Chris, in that case, obviously provided a lot of value. He was able to close the deals, and so that let us excel and do really well, and it let him excel and do really well. And we did
Totally.
well together. And without him, that wouldn't be a great success story.
Yeah. I love that you have a case study of where it worked well together. I want to apply my hypothesis. We'll use it as a litmus test. I believe you said his name was Chris. Was Chris authentic from what you could tell? Was Chris bold from what you saw?
Mostly.
Mostly.
He got a little. He got a little nervous on price, but mostly bold.
Mostly bold. Yeah. So kind of like we're almost there. And then was Chris a curious lad?
Mostly, yeah.
Mostly, yeah. Because I think if we can really, I always say that curiosity, it's the golden key. We can't forget about it. Because if we can get curious about what that block is, then we can usually step up to the plate a little bit bolder, to use this analogy you're using. The best sellers are closers. And to be clear, everybody plays a role in the sales process, including marketing. Even though that may not be your fundamental job, you've helped move it through the pipeline, or help bring it in the funnel, whatever, however the sales system is structured. And then ultimately the individuals like Chris that are there to close, they've got to use these ABCs to do it. And I guess, knowing that he was authentic and mostly bold, mostly curious, would you call Chris charismatic, or would you call him something else?
You know, it's funny. I don't know if I do, and it's probably because of my limitation understanding of the word charismatic. I would say Chris is a great guy. But I think so. As I think about your definition, and actually I want to revise one of my scores. When you said, was he bold? Yeah, let me just go ahead and move that fully to bold, because this was a wealth management group. And one of the things that Chris reluctantly but boldly signed off on was, let me put on their website that their chief investment officer used to be a gambler. So that took some boldness to do
Boldness.
it. Now, we were doing it for very scientific reasons. We knew why we were doing it. It was very calculated, and it's, a counterintuitive thing that builds trust when you put things like that on the website. It's very counterintuitive, but it works brilliantly. And so Chris was bold because that was a crazy ask on my part.
Totally. Well, I love
And
that you're giving him I didn't mean to cut you off, Craig, but the benefit of the doubt to change your answer. I can tell the memory recalls coming back, like, oh, I forgot he did this. And that really is bold, and we need more colleagues and coworkers in our workplace that do that and give us the benefit of the doubt and say, that took some real cojones, or there was a lot of bravery that sat behind that action.
yeah. So the I mean, and this is my world, so I'm just going to end my podcast. So I'm going to be selfish
Do it, go.
and ask you. Obviously, I want as many great studies. I want to be able to report as many times that we tripled revenue in a year and a half as possible. And to do that, I need a better relationship with sales guys. I need sales guys that can close, but we have to work together. Now, you work with sales teams.
I do.
How do you make them better, and how do you make them work with marketing?
Sure.
And I'm not trying to put it on their shoulders, but I'm just trying to understand from the other side of the glass, what are you seeing and how do we do it?
Totally. Let me answer what I'm seeing first and then tell you how I do it. Because I do think every business is unique in and of its own right, right? Otherwise, I don't think there's two companies that are exactly the same. A lot of similarities maybe across big tech, but unique cultures and so forth. I'm seeing a lot of scarcity in the market, meaning that a lot of sellers are afraid of AI giving other teams a competitive advantage as opposed to their own team. I'm like, you can use it too, unless there's a company policy that prohibits you from doing it. And I think AI is a phenomenal tool to enhance outputs, quality of work. It's a great thought partner, great sounding board. It's a great efficiency tool, productivity tool. The list goes on and on, the benefits. And I'm not here to talk about AI because I'm no expert on it. But what I am seeing in the market with sellers is that it's less about AI taking their job. It's more about, is there going to be a competitor that is using it or leveraging it to their advantage over us? And so what I preach and what I talk about is the art of relational selling. AI can tell you a lot of things about what to do, but it's not going to actually show you how to do it. And that's what I workshop with all of my clients, so that they really get to know themselves and their style, and ensuring that they are selling on such a highly relational level that they're honoring charisma as human connection, not trying to push through a transaction, because that's what AI is pushing us. Like, more transactions, more volume, more quantity. For me, it's all about quality. So how do we do that, Craig? Really, two things. My business is called Be Confident and Kind, and there's a reason for that. Confidence is an energy, or rather it's a doing energy that is underpinned to competence. We can only become confident in something if we build up that competency that I talked about in the social stereotype content model. So it's all about reps, reps, reps. and to know thyself, what you're saying, how you're saying it, and how it can be improved and fine-tuned. The kindness piece, though, we cannot lose sight of it because we could talk all day about value and benefits and why this makes sense for you. But if it feels prescriptive and it doesn't feel human, like I'm leading with humanity and I'm kind when you're giving me feedback, maybe it's on price, maybe it's on something else. And then I'm taking it back to the team and I'm using the influence I have to kindly deliver this feedback so that my product team or the engineers are going to want to improve it. Then we're going to get stuck in a stalemate or that bottleneck effect. So I think the best thing that the teams I work with can develop is what is it that's giving them confidence? How can we do more of it? And what are the areas that we need to deploy more kindness to become effective with the desired end result for the team, which is always to grow the bottom line. If the bottom line's growing, the business is thriving, we're going to get bigger end of year bonuses, which we all want, better payouts. Like a lot of people, not everyone is motivated by money, but that is a great across the board way to say we as a team, the tide will rise together.
That's fascinating. The so let me just kind of touch give my take on AI. And you were saying it, you were using different words, but I believe there's one thing AI hasn't figured out, and that's human connection. And I have a proof point, and it's a little bit salacious.
Let's hear it.
If AI had figured out human connection, then OnlyFans would not be a viable business model.
Yeah, hadn't
I
thought of that.
mean, think about the vocabulary needed for that, how much the training on the LLM. It's not like it's quoting Shakespeare, it's limited vocabulary. But there's something missing that humans bring to the picture. And kind of tying in what you're talking about with the folks feeling scarcity, folks afraid about AI losing their job. I'm like, at least as far as I can see, the ability to make a connection, an emotional connection with another human, is a human function, not a machine function. And like you said, you can augment your work with AI. It's a great companion. It's a great companion. But at least as far as I can see, and guess what? The porn industry has gazillions of dollars to spend on trying to do this. It solves a lot of problems for them. They haven't cracked it. And so I think whether it's any job that requires human connection, I don't think AI is your competitor.
That's a fascinating lens that I've never even considered. What's coming up for me, Craig, is this idea that going back to your example of the fax machine, if that had been implemented at your organization and there was somebody still waiting for the faxes to come in because there was this reactionary business model of this person wants it at $10 per product or per unit, this person wants it at 250 or whatever scale or metric we're talking about. And I'll tie it back real quickly to sports. For example, the owner I worked for used to say, you can go outside our football stadium and buy a bottle of water for $10, or excuse me, for $2, $2.50, but you can go inside and we can charge $10. Like that's just the idea of pricing and knowing your worth, right? Like outside, it's the same bottle of water, but outside you're paying 250 and inside you're paying 4x. You're paying $10. So I say that because that person, if there was that person checking the faxes today, we know, Craig, their job would be done. Like AI would already be processing those faxes, but when they came in. So AI is coming for jobs. I hate to say it, but it's the kind thing to say for people that are in, for a lack of a better word, like synthesizing data or processing paper, very administrative roles, generally speaking. Now, I'm not saying anyone who's listening to this that's an executive assistant run out and quit your job and find something else, but you might be prudent to think about where you play in the sales cycle. Because the fact of the matter is, sales is what keeps CEOs up at night. I hear it from every executive leader I've talked to. It's all about the bottom line and not just revenue, which is great to generate, but are we on a path to profitability or are we remaining profitable? So, all that to say, if you know how to connect with others and you've developed your charisma craft, you have this art of human connection, you can close like Chris could, then you are indispensable. Like they're going to want to retain you because of your talent. And that's not to say you're a rock star and you do it better than everyone else. Like I'm all for celebrating star power, but it has to be uniquely your own because there are other people who can do it too. And until AI figures out how to do it on our behalf, we're going to continue to need people who are real, because that's the other thing I'm hearing in the future of work. It's not just the scarcity mindset, but on the other end, it's the skepticism of, am I talking to a real human? Because I want to. We're craving that. That pendulum is going to swing back of like, I want to have a human connection about, I've been a client of yours or a customer for 10, 20 years. We're due for a price bait because quality control has gone down. Or we want you to freeze our pricing for the next 2 years, and here's why. And they want to like be able to negotiate and not have to go through a robobot. That's just the fact of the matter.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, Milam, we could go in for a couple hours. We've talked about Joe Rogan. I'm convinced I could go Joe Rogan length podcast with you,
Sure.
but I'm not sure. You probably have dinner or something to get to, and we should wrap up. This has been really, really good. How can people reach you, and where can they get your book? Your book again is the Let me make sure I get the Charisma Craft, a modern leadership guide to enhance your Riz factor. Where can they get that, and how can they contact you?
That's right. The Charisma Craft is available on Amazon in multiple countries, all countries globally for that matter. And you can find me on LinkedIn, Milam, Milam Miller, like the beer, very easy to remember. And I'm also available at beconfidentandkind.com. I'll say that again, www.beconfidentandkind.com. We would love to work with any sales teams, and especially you sales leaders that set the tone and tempo to build and cultivate a psychologically safe and high-performing team.
All right. Well, I do hope people reach out to you because I think you have a lot to offer. Thank you for coming on Leaders and Legacies.
Thanks so much, Craig. It was fun talking to you.
This is Craig Andrews. I want to thank you for listening to the Leaders and Legacies podcast. We're looking for leaders to share how they're making impact beyond themselves. If that's you, please go to alliesforme.com/guest and sign up there. If you got something out of this interview, we would love you to share this episode on social media. Just do a quick screenshot with your phone and text it to a friend or post it on the socials. If you know someone who would be a great guest, tag them on social media and let them know about the show, including the hashtag Leaders and Legacies. I love seeing your posts and suggestions. We are regularly putting out new episodes and content. To make sure you don't miss anything, please go ahead and subscribe. Your thumbs up, ratings, and reviews go a long way to help promote the show. And it means a lot to me. It means a lot to my team. If you want to know more, please go to alliesforme.com or follow me on LinkedIn. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time.